Welcome to the Forum Storytellers Podcast. This is Forum President and CEO Brian Whalen. Forum Storytellers shares and preserves stories about life and work in the field of education abroad. I hope that you enjoy the stories featured in this podcast.
Today's date is May 28th, 2015, and my name is Charles Chuck Cliozzo, and I have the honor of interviewing John Booth, who is formerly affiliated with Syracuse University. John, I'd like to begin as, did you study abroad?
I did not study abroad. I met my bride freshman year orientation week, and I didn't want to leave her to study abroad, so I stayed at Denison University all 4 years and did not study abroad.
And then your wife? Is she a motivator?
She is a motivator, but not related to study abroad. She's been a great supporter of study abroad.
Oh, great.
I would say that my equivalent of a study abroad experience was going into the Peace Corps, which we did together. I was a history major before they had international relations as a major, and my father wanted me to go to law school. I had a vision of wanting to work in the State Department and work on diplomacy, but a faculty advisor told me, well, you need to get some experience abroad first, and if you go to law school, they'll train you to think in a certain way. So think about an overseas experience and then going to a graduate school in international affairs, and that's what I did. So I went into the Peace Corps in India. My wife and I went.
Wonderful.
And then I came back with a severe case of reverse culture shock, having lived in village India and no longer wanted to work for the U.S. government, and was looking for a school or a job, and went to Brattleboro, Vermont, where the School for International Training had just established a program in international career training. And I drove up this dirt road, and there were international flags flying and people speaking different languages, which I didn't understand, so I felt totally at home and was able to get into the graduate program and then work there for 4 years. And during the time that I was there, one of my responsibilities was to promote the experiment's graduate and undergraduate programs. And I was invited to a NAFSA conference in Region 7, the Southeast, and I was talking about the International Career Training Program, and somebody said, wouldn't that be great for study abroad professionals to have a program of training? And to make a long story short, a colleague wrote a proposal, got a $15,000 grant from the Carnegie Corporation to bring 50 study abroad professionals in the field to Brattleboro for a week of training. And I wasn't the trainer, but I was the chief logistics person. So I had 50 professionals in the field, and I got a job offer to go to the University of Michigan after that. And I've been involved in education abroad ever since. I kind of discovered it and made a tight network of friends and got involved that way.
So actually, you really get into how you got into the field as well, didn't you?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, good. What motivates your work in education abroad?
I can think of very few other experiences that can have potentially more profound impact on individuals than the opportunity during those formative years when you're 19 to 22 to be taken out of your comfort zone and be placed in another culture and have to figure it out. And so my wife was involved in childbirth education, which is a transformational event, and I felt I was involved in a transformational event of, we had a slogan in our office in Minnesota, we move bodies to change minds. Mm. And
excellent.
So what got me up and motivated every day was knowing that something positive was going to happen for 95% of the people that went abroad. It would be a profound, life-changing experience. My background is as a Quaker, a pacifist, and I felt I could contribute to world peace by getting people to go abroad. And one of the experiment in International Living's mottos is people learn to live together by living together. And that's what you do in study abroad. So that's what motivated me.
Wonderful. You know, you'd be an excellent mentor. No, you really would. What is your favorite story from your life in education abroad?
Well, I had four chapters. My time at the Experiment / School for International Training, which was 5 years. Then I went to the University of Michigan International Center, where I was an advisor. My first job was in sales. My second job was in advising. My third job was at the University of Minnesota for 15 years as the director of the International Study and Travel Center. So that was administration, but of advising. And then my fourth, quote, job was at Syracuse University for 18 years, where I was administering study abroad programs. But my fondest memory is of my early years with NAFSA SACUSA. Education abroad was a stepchild of NAFSA. It was the National Association for Foreign Student Affairs, and there was federal government funding for the foreign student component, but no funding for the study abroad component. And while I was on the national team, funding came through. And it was an ideal time to say, okay, what does our field need? And to develop, you know, with you, the financial aid workshop that we worked on together, and the in-service training opportunities for people to go to exemplary programs like the Michigan State program or the Michigan program. And it became a little bit onerous because so many people wanted to go to visit those campuses that we created the group in-service seminar so 15 people could go at one time. And the first one was done at the University of Tennessee, and the second one was done with you at Michigan State. And there were publications that were conceived and developed. So it was exhilarating to be not exactly at the creation, but at the great leap forward, if you will, for the field. That it was an honor and a privilege to be part of that window of opportunity.
You certainly have had many diverse experiences in several institutions. I assume you learned something from each of those institutions, University of Minnesota, Syracuse, University of Michigan, etc.
I did. The working at the Experiment, it was a, quote, provider in that it didn't have undergraduate students of its own, and it did have graduate students of its own. And then so that was interesting to have that experience of being a provider, which is a very big part of education abroad right now. And then working at Michigan, I felt liberated because I wasn't in sales anymore. And it was all about trying to help the student find out the best niche for them. And so learning how to listen. I took some courses in counseling and learned how to hear there was a colleague, you know, John Heise, director at the International Center at the University of Michigan. He had four questions that he thought we should think about when we're advising students. First question is, what do the person ask for? Second is, what do they want? Third is, what do they need? And the fourth is, what do we want for them? So someone could come in and say, what's the address for the Oxford University? But what they want is to study abroad, and they've heard of Oxford. Well, back when I was advising, you couldn't go to Oxford. So what they needed to know was their opportunities were, and what we wanted for them was the office perspective of, you should consider a Michigan program, but if that doesn't work, here's some other options. So I learned a lot about advising at Michigan. In Minnesota, it was an incredible office. At the University of Minnesota, the average graduate was 26 years old, and a lot of them had been abroad. So we had a network of peer advisors, and I used to cite, you know, Alexander the Great was like 23 when he conquered a lot of the known world, and I gained great confidence in the ability of young people to be advisors and educators. And then at Syracuse, I think dealing with risk management issues and liability and all of those things were informative. I learned a lot about that.
If I might bring into this in terms of study abroad, what's your view of internships?
I think internships are terrific. I think that they are potentially problematic because Americans go in thinking they're God's gift to humanity, and the intern receiver, may want them to serve coffee or whatever. So there can be a mixed match. I think a lot of progress has been made in the last decade or two to improve the quality of the intern's experience. And I know you pioneered a lot of really good internship work at Michigan State, but I think it's has an excellent place if it's well planned and well executed.
Thank you. What has been the proudest moment in your education abroad career?
I would say being recognized by my peers. I received the Homer Higbee Award, named after the former dean of Michigan State University, a person who I greatly admired and worked with in various capacities, and life membership in NAFSA, and the Forum Award for a good colleague, Peter Wolitzer. So being recognized by my peers for my contributions made me very proud.
Well, it's all because of your legacy and your formidable contributions as well.
Thank you.
What brings you most satisfaction in your professional life? Or what brought you, I might add?
You're right, because I'm retired.
You're
It was the magic of working with an individual who would come in for information, the advising, I think, to help somebody to make a difference in their lives in terms of helping them figure out the right opportunity match for them, and then mentoring the student staff that we had at Minnesota, and then in my time at Syracuse, mentoring some of the younger staff there has been very satisfying.
Good. Who are your best education abroad friends, and how did you meet, and what makes you such good friends?
They are, without a doubt, the people that I've met in the field. The Brattleboro workshop that I referred to with these 50 people, I got to know people fast back early in my career, and so I was chair of SACUSA 37 years ago, which is hard to believe, but making friends and then seeing them each year and working on projects throughout the year, different institutions, you may be a one-person office or a small office, or you may not be very appreciated. I always felt sustained and supported by the people I would meet and work with at NAFSA and the Forum, and so those the leaders, the other leaders who were as committed and to making the world a better place by advancing the field.
What is your message to the education abroad field nowadays? Because there's so many different issues.
That's a tough one. I guess it would be to be true to the ultimate goal of education abroad, which is substantive learning. And I was talking with a colleague about his concern about how the field has evolved to become more travel tourism. It's not exactly like the old movie of This Is Tuesday, It Must Be Belgium, but it's in the rush to get more people abroad, which I fully support, and the challenges of funding study abroad, there are more really short programs which maybe don't scratch the surface. So if you do short-term programs, and that's a good thing, you need to do adequate preparation and processing before, during, and after so that it is truly an educational experience and not just a 20-year-old tourist experience.
What about these initiatives from the State Department having their own office of a director of study abroad, also from the point of view of the IIE initiative?
Yeah, I think those are wonderful. I think that, as I said earlier, when I first got involved in the field, the study abroad was a stepchild and not funded, and now it's front and center. And the same was true in universities. Study abroad was on the periphery, and now it's in the center, and college presidents know they need to have a strong educational program. So I think those are terrific things. And the State Department, having been there when there was only initially approval for State Department funding, and now the State Department has a whole bureau, a whole division, I think that's wonderful that there's really been a come of age, and there's nowhere to go but to bigger and better things for everybody.
I remember during our tenure, one problem, at least in several institutions, was how to convince central administration of the effectiveness of study abroad. You know, I think some of them have felt this is actually fun time, fun and frolics. How would you convince them, or what would you do?
Well, I think there are a couple things that have been successfully done. One is research, and I would point to the IES having done longitudinal studies of how their participants from 30 years ago, how their life was impacted by education abroad. And Michael Page has done studies. When I was at the University of Minnesota, he did a study that showed that students who studied abroad were more receptive to diversity and more accepting of diverse people. So, and then the learning outcomes, being able to just take language. There's the speaking abilities of students improve markedly when they study abroad, and sometimes the grammatical doesn't improve as much, and people are working on that. But I think being able to point to the research that demonstrates the positive outcomes is one thing. And another is just pointing at the relevance in this world. It's a competitive, international world. We need to think globally, and you need to understand it. So those are the kinds of things that I advocate.
I'd like to just add an addendum to that. I know that in terms of our administrators and faculty at Michigan State, it was an evolution. But what we did was to send the deans, the associate deans, those that were neutral, those that might have been hostile to study abroad, let them have the experience. And then when they came back, it's amazing the impact that it had, seeing those students and talking to them. Also, in establishing programs, we had, you know, quite a few faculty-led programs. Of course, they couldn't teach the same thing overseas as they did on campus. But if they had an idea about a program, give them the seed money.
Right.
And then let them develop, but it couldn't be a one-shot deal.
That's right, yes. Faculty involvement is critical on all sorts of levels. It reminds me of an anecdotal story about the director of admissions at Syracuse University, who was sort of lukewarm about education abroad, but his daughter studied abroad in Strasbourg, France, and he and his wife went over to visit her. And this is true for lots of people. For the first time, the daughter was the expert. And the daughter was the one that was showing the parents around, had the linguistic skills and the cultural skills and the maturity. And the director of admissions came back convinced. You know, he was a convert. He saw that his daughter grew up. Another quick story, there was a NAFSA conference that there was a speaker from the State Department, and he said his son studied abroad when he was in college, and he came back and he was all grew up, and he said, if I'd known that, I would have sent him in high school. Because that's what happens when you go abroad. And both my kids did study abroad in high school, and they both came back much more confident and capable. Institutions today are much more willing to spend money because they know the value, but in the early days they weren't so sure, and so that seed money was essential.
Many of you have heard of the rivalry between University of Michigan and Michigan State University in athletics and in other fields. This is not the case, as you can see, in study abroad, and I think these interviews personify.
Absolutely. We had a great time working together during my days in Michigan, and wonderful colleagues at Michigan State that I've always thoroughly enjoyed. It's always been a hallmark program, the Michigan State program.
Well, I can say that for your legacies in the U of M, particularly your information center there. And, of course, Syracuse and Minnesota.
Yeah. So, thank you.
Thank you.
On the next Forum Storytellers podcast, the Forum remembers Joe Brockington. Please tune in.